Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea broadcasting live from deep in the heart of Liberty State, Spokane Valley. Once again, welcome to Patriot Radio, brought to you by the committee to elect Matt Shea, Republican in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. Better hope not being in man, but in Jesus Christ, about not ending in prayer, but moving to action. About Luke 17, 20 through 21, now having been questioned by the Pharisees as to when the kingdom of God was coming, he answered them and said, "The kingdom of God is not coming with signs to be observed, nor will they look, or will they say, 'Look, here it is,' or 'There it is.' For behold, the kingdom of God is inside you," or in some translations, "in your midst." There is a reticence today in America to speak out for what is right. I was talking to somebody today who was relating that at their place of employment, there have been some overt promotions of the LGBTQ agenda. And this person privately talked to a lot of his coworkers. And what he realized was that everybody thought it was too far what they're doing. And yet, everybody was afraid to say something. Self-censorship, where you feel afraid to say something, is the worst form of tyranny. The worst form of tyranny. I have seen a lot of things in the legislature, a lot of people come into my office, and it is becoming increasingly clear that they are afraid to speak out, to call out corruption, to point out hypocrisy, to say, you know what? What you're trying to promote, that doesn't fit with my conscience. And Satan wants you to be quiet. The evil one wants you to self-censor. The evil one wants you to stuff it down inside and maybe wait for another day. The evil one wants you to think that you are not supposed to speak out against right and wrong, but specifically against wrong, and speak out for what is right. The evil one wants you to think that. In fact, the schemes of evil count on you not doing anything. They count on everybody cowering in the corner, not saying anything, keeping their head down. That's what the former Soviet Union did. And when you walked over after the fall of the wall, people still kept their heads down. Nobody smiled. Nobody showed emotion because they were afraid still. They were conditioned. And if that's the case, that is tyranny. Why would we want to live in a country that specifically tried to crush dissent and oppositions, even crazy ideas? I mean, the great thing about Copernicus and Galileo, many people over the centuries, was some of them had a crazy idea. And you know what? They were right. Some of them were persecuted for those ideas, but they were right. We shouldn't be afraid of so-called crazy ideas, because who determines what's crazy? For example, you know, having drag queen reading time. That to me is crazy. Dressing up in horrific costumes looks crazy to me. Now, I'm going to get to that here a little bit later in the show, but it is fascinating that suddenly there is a self-appointed nobility in America And I'm not just talking about bureaucrats or some elected. I'm talking there is a Marxist, self-appointed nobility in America who thinks that they can determine orthodoxy. They can determine what should be orthodox, what should be the thing everybody does that nobody deviates from. That's not freedom. Freedom is you got a couple of ideas, people battle it out, iron sharpens iron, facts and truth win, and everybody's the better for it. And as a side note, the truth is Jesus Christ, right? Because, and just as another little side note, all these folks that come out and say, I am a whatever, I am an Odin worshiper, whatever that even means, right? What's your standard by which you're determining what is right and what is wrong? When it says free exercise of religion, that presumes going beyond the four walls of the church. It presumes it. It presumes being beyond the four walls. And the schemes of evil want you to not judge right and wrong. Oh, we're not supposed to judge. You're not supposed to judge. Yeah, you are. You're not supposed to condemn. But you are supposed to judge what is right and what is wrong. Especially if you've given your life to Jesus Christ, that's actually a duty. Now, that's not saying, like some people, we all know who they are in our churches, that have the gift of judgment, right? Which there's no such thing as the gift of judgment. But they do, or they think they do. And they're always judging everybody else. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the issues of the day, right and wrong. Is it wrong to kill a child in the womb? Yes, it is. It's murder. Most innocent place in the world. Yes, that is murder. That is wrong. And we should be able to say that straight out. Any sexual relations outside of marriage is wrong. That's the scripture. And so we can look at things and say, well, that doesn't fit that. That's wrong. We can talk about the fact that if somebody tries to come on your property and steal it or deprive you of the economic viability of that property through regulation, that's theft. That is wrong. And we shouldn't be afraid of this. They want us to be afraid of this. They want us to cower in the corner. And a lot of this comes from this thing, not just the do not judge thing. We are supposed to judge actions, issues. God judges the heart. But he also gave us the ability of discernment, the gift of discernment, to judge and test fruit. And so you have a lot of folks too that will today try to say, well, okay, whatever, we don't want your religion anywhere in society. Despite the fact that Christianity is what made America great, and that's not just me, I actually give it in presentations. It's irrefutable historical evidence. But then you have some people say there needs to be, and there is, a separation of church and state. And they repeat this myth, and it is a myth, it is a lie, over and over and over and over again. And it's interesting with the left. They won't debate with facts. They just repeat the lie. It's just like I said here a couple weeks ago, Vox Day had this brilliant three-part thing. Social justice warriors always lie. They always double down the lie. And they always project. In other words, they put onto you how they are themselves. But separation of church and state. Let's talk about that. Where did that come from? Because it is not in the Constitution, and it is not in any of the founding documents. And you can look. Go look for it. So I want to go through this briefly and talk about where this idea came from. The Supreme Court, the United States, tried to grab this out of a letter between the Danbury Baptist Association to Thomas Jefferson, and then Thomas Jefferson's response back to them, and then, probably a lot less known, Thomas Jefferson again addressed this issue in his second inaugural address. So I want to read the letter from the Danbury Baptist Association briefly to Thomas Jefferson, because this is important, because they weren't saying that there shouldn't be any belief in Jesus Christ in government. What they were saying is that government should never intrude in the church. Okay, here it is. The Danbury Baptist Association was afraid that government was going to come into the church. And this is what they wrote to Thomas Jefferson. Our sentiments are uniformly on the side of religious liberty, that religion is at all times and places a matter between God and individuals, that no man ought to suffer in his name, person, or effects on account of his religious opinions, and the legitimate power of civil government extends no further than to punish the man who works ill to his neighbor. Therefore, what religious privileges we enjoy as a minor part of the state, this is in parentheses here, we enjoy as favors granted and not as inalienable rights. But, sir, our constitution of government and these favors we receive at the expense of such degrading acknowledgments as are inconsistent with the rights of free men. In other words, their right of free exercise of religion, to them, they were concerned, was becoming a privilege, not a right that was unalienable, that could never be touched by government. Okay, then he goes on. Then the association goes on. It is not to be wondered at, therefore, if those who seek after power and gain under the pretense of government and religion should reproach their chief magistrate. Now, that was a term used for the president of the United States back then. As an enemy of religion, law, and good order, because he will not, dares not, assume the prerogative of Jehovah and makes laws to govern the kingdom of Christ. In other words, the saying is that if the president of the United States understands his proper place, he is going to have detractors because he's not going to make laws that infringe on the church. Now, in this letter, you can read it. It was October 7th, 1801. It was the Danbury Baptist Association to Thomas Jefferson. Okay, now Thomas Jefferson replied on January 1st, 1802, so a few months later. Here's what he said. Quote, believing with you that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, that he owes account to none for his faith or his worship, that the legislative powers of government reach actions only and not opinions, I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature would make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state. In other words, government should not be interfering into the matters of the church, living out your faith, living out and worshiping as you see fit according to the dictates of your conscience. Now, there was still some reticence in regards to Jefferson, and so he addressed the matter again in his second inaugural address, and that was March 4th, 1805, paragraph 7. Quote, in matters of religion, I have considered that its free exercise is placed by the Constitution independent of the powers of the general government. In other words, general government can't touch it. I have therefore undertaken on no occasion to prescribe the religious exercises suited to it, but have left them, as the Constitution found them, under the direction and discipline of the church or state authorities acknowledged by the several religious societies. In other words, there were some churches at the time that were state churches. The state had a church. So like Connecticut, New Hampshire, like a state had a church. So this whole idea of separation of church and state is total folly. But where do we find separation of church and state? I'm glad you asked. We find it actually in the 1936 Soviet Constitution, Article 124. Let me read that to you. In order to ensure citizens' freedom of conscience, the church in the USSR is separated from the state and the school from the church. freedom of religious worship is recognized for all citizens, end quote. Now, most of the members of the Slavic community listening to the show right now are like, yeah, that really ever happened, right? Because it didn't. It was under Stalin. They didn't abide by that. But no, they didn't want the church interfering in anything in the state. Because if the morality of Christianity permeated the Soviet system, it would have collapsed a heck of a lot sooner. And Stalin knew that. And that brings us now to this final point. We no longer have a choice to sit on the sideline. Either we are in the fight, or we are helping the other side that wants to destroy America and destroy Christendom. There really isn't a choice. We have to pick. It has become, it has come to that point. And you will notice that the detractors out there, they try to sound good, but at the very center of what they're doing is to try to eliminate Christianity. Whether you're talking Marxism, Islamism, whether you're talking some of these local folks that have been detracted, they're trying to get rid of Christianity. They're warring against Christ. Christ said this. He said, they've hated me, they will hate you. And, you know, interestingly enough, the latest round of this started on Holy Thursday, right before Good Friday, which I found profound, that Christ was, his prophecy again was fulfilled. They hated Jesus, they are going to hate us. And that shouldn't be a deterrent to us. We should stand up. We should fight. When is it enough? They're coming after our neighbors right now, trying to take their jobs, trying to take their homes, trying to make them impoverished, trying to take their kids. We've got to stand up. And the largest voting bloc in America that isn't registered to vote is Christians. The largest voting bloc in America that is registered to vote but that doesn't vote is Christians. If we were actually living out our call, and this is where I am not Anabaptist, because I believe that the mission field is the world. When you step outside the church, it's a mission field, and that includes politics. Otherwise, you're denying or downplaying the command Christ gave to us to make disciples of all nations and to go preach the gospel to all creation. We must live out our faith beyond the four walls of the church and bring the standards that God has left us to the public square. The founding fathers believed this. They wrote about it. And you know what's interesting? In Thomas Jefferson's response to the Danbury Baptists, he actually outlines his faith in God at the end of it. And you have a lot of people saying, oh, he was a deist, da da da. He couldn't have been a deist by the proper definition of deism, because he believed that God intervened in the affairs of men. So he couldn't have been a deist. It doesn't make sense by that definition. It doesn't fit. But here's what he said. I reciprocate your kind prayers for the protection and blessings of the common Father and Creator of man. Wow. He left us an example. The founding fathers left us an example. Jesus left us an example. Many of our brothers and sisters in the persecuted church around the world have left us the example. Are we going to step out and live the way that Christ has called us to live, boldly and unafraid and unashamed? Well, that brings us now to your daily intelligence briefing on the international front. Tomorrow, June 4th, 30 years since Tiananmen Square, 30 years I spoke with one of the members of the Chinese community, one of the leaders of the Chinese community, and we talked about this a little bit. It's amazing that it's been that long, and still, I mean, still, China continues to grow. And we're seeing now a crackdown in China. The agenda to build their military, to project power through a blue water navy, and the quite literally millions of people that have died as a result of atheist communism. And by the way, we can say unequivocally, that's wrong. It's wrong. And our standard is the Bible. What's your standard? Because our standard has led to the most prosperity and the greatest freedom in the history of the world. Also on the international front, in Israel, this coming to us from Debka File, there was another missile attack over the weekend. Israel has also attacked Iranian Hezbollah concentrations in Lebanon and near Damascus, apparently, as well. And Mount Hermon positions of the Israelis and also some other positions overlooking the Golan were the positions that they attacked or had aimed the missiles at. And I'm sorry, actually, the 4th of June, is today. So today is the anniversary of Tiananmen Square. Forgive me, I lost today. All right, also on the national front, this is a bombshell article. There have been quite a few lying members of the mainstream media out there that have tried to say that there is no link between Jason Wilson, this is the guy that recently attacked Christian patriots, no link between him and Antifa, when in fact there is. And a report linked Huffington Post, The Guardian, and the Southern Poverty Law Center to the left-wing domestic terror group Antifa. You got to go see this article. It was published on May 23rd. It's interesting. They call out Jason Wilson specifically. But Ian Linehan of Stuttgart, Germany, a former teacher, he's now an analyst concentrating on online extremism, found that despite Antifa's well-known acts of violence, that reporters and staffers with Huffington Post, The Guardian, and the SPLC, you know, with The Guardian, again, that was Jason Wilson, and the SPLC, have nevertheless maintained contact with Antifa activists. Now, PJ Media has a story. Out of 58,000-plus Antifa-affiliated accounts, they whittled it down to about 962, and then Mr. Linehan went through and connected all of those. So you have it conclusive now through this report. And you understand now why they try to label those on the right extremist and then cover up and downplay and fail to denounce, like this reporter from iFiber One, who failed to denounce four times, I asked him. He failed to denounce violence from groups like Antifa. Because what they're doing is they're projecting onto us how they are themselves. This is one of it's the third rule. So go check this article out. Share it with your friends and family. It's conclusive. And there really is not much of an argument left about the links now between them since they've shown it. But what the question is, will they continue down this road? And probably going into 2020, we're going to continue to see downplaying of Antifa, calling it quiet protests, silent protests, peaceful protesters, all this garbage. It just simply isn't true. And Chad Sokol with the Spokesman Review completely lied about this event the other night where these guys came in and they're cursing, dropping F-bombs in front of kids, shoved a guy. You know, and they're like saying these are peaceful protesters. You're going to start seeing this propaganda come up. And there's video conclusively disproving these people, but you're going to see this continue. And they think that if they can say the lie often enough, that it doesn't matter. That you're gonna believe it. But everybody out there is getting smarter because of the rise of video and also the rise of social media. All right, I'm going to move next to the USMCA agreement, and I want to talk about this briefly. The USMCA agreement has a bunch of different issues, okay? But specifically, I want to highlight the problems with the USMCA agreement, and I don't think Trump has read this. I think if he had read it, he would say, yeah, no, we're not going to do this. So the USMCA agreement was characterized by Richard Haass, who's the president of the CFR, as, quote, the USMCA is NAFTA plus TPP plus a few tweaks. So all the things that we don't like, ostensibly against, they're saying that this is what it is. All right. Also on this issue, you will see, if you read the USMCA, that it only allows Mexico to retain ownership and control of its energy reserves. That's Chapter 8. It subordinates the United States to international organizations and conventions like the International Labor Organization, the Law of the Sea Treaty, the United Nations, legalizes collective bargaining, legalizes workplace gender identity protections, legalizes illegal immigration protections, and promotes the North American Economic Integration, aka the North American Union, which was the precursor of the failed now, or failing, I should say, European Union. And you can read most of this in chapters 23 and 24 of the USMCA. So take a look at that, and don't be fooled by it. All right, also on the national front. So Planned Parenthood lost in court in regards to one thing in particular. It was in regards to these videos that were depicting these folks buying and selling baby body parts, predominantly apparently selling. Planned Parenthood tried to say, oh, this is taken out of context, and the court ruled, no, it's not. Number two, Planned Parenthood lost a battle in the courts, I think it was at appellate court level, where, and then we, I think, are seeing it at the Supreme Court, that human baby body parts are not garbage, which what they were arguing. They're actually human remains and need to be treated as such. And so this Indiana law that characterized those as human remains was upheld. Lastly, a Louisiana governor, a Democrat who is pro-life, signed into law an effective abortion ban in Louisiana. So this is why these guys are scared. They're on the run. On the regional front, 500 moms strong is going to protest this drag queen story hour. Apparently, this is going to be June 15th at the South Hill Branch Library. And then there's another of these story time hours or whatever for June, planned for June 22nd downtown Spokane, the downtown library branch in Spokane. Now, these are public libraries. Now, folks, there's a levy coming up where they need more money for the libraries. Yeah, no thank you. No thank you. This kind of stuff happens. Now, I know that one is county and one is city. I get that. But you know what? If they're going to abuse public resources like this, no. And this 500 Mom Strong was formed by Anna Bohatch and Kim Hall, great pro-life folks. And really, you know, coming against what is just, I believe, the sexualization of children and just indoctrination of kids. You got to understand, though, again, to be Christian, you're going to get hit. And we're seeing that happen more and more. Lastly, just want to take a moment, too, and if we could right now, wherever you are right now, if you could just take a moment of silence on this 30th anniversary of Tiananmen Square, and just take a moment of silence and just pray for the persecuted Christians around the world. So we're going to take about 10, 15 seconds. Just pray for them and keep praying for them after the show as well. In Jesus' name, amen. All right. That's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thanks to everybody that has been going to Patriot Radio US on Facebook and liking the page. Share it with your friends and family. If you want to support the show, you can go to VoteShea.com. And we're also on iTunes and Podbean. Well, my guest today is none other than Tim Iman. And probably, and I don't want you to comment on this, Tim, but you have cost the Marxists and the folks that have wanted to destroy this country billions of dollars over the years and save taxpayers that much money, too. So thanks for coming on.
Well, I appreciate that very much. And I always have to remind myself, though, that, you know, yeah, we sponsor these initiatives, but it's the voters that pass them into law. So it's important for us to realize our role in this is not omnipotent. It is merely a facilitator for the voters.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I appreciate how humble you always are when we bring this up. So, look, you've got a website now, Permanent Offense, but I want to go into 1648. Can you describe to the listeners what you've got on the docket right now and what you're fighting?
Well, it's easier for people to spell givethemnothing.com. So it's givethemnothing.com. It's amazing how the word permanent throws people off. How do you spell permanent? Givethemnothing.com. 1648. Really an extraordinary initiative. The Democrats in charge of Olympia, both the House, the Senate, and the governorship, basically were like alcoholics that just fell off the wagon. They just went absolutely, completely bonkers this legislative session on a whole host of fronts, forced immunizations, sanctuary state, I mean, just nutso stuff. But obviously, I mostly focus on taxes, and they raised 11 different taxes. They're going to cost taxpayers over $27 billion over the next 10 years, and our initiative would kill off all of them.
So there were 11. Yeah, there were 11 bills. Now, this is, I think folks miss this. There were 11 bills this was really targeted at. But more than that, it's how we're doing our budget. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of profligacy in perpetuity. And I'm sorry to use two big words there, but there it is. So
no, that's right.
Tell the listeners a little bit about all the taxes and that massive increase in the budget that you've been seeing and we've all been experiencing over the last few years.
Well, it's really mind-blowing. I mean, you're never supposed to do numbers on the radio, but, I mean, there's really no way around it. In the last six legislative sessions, 6 years in the state of Washington, there's been nine tax increases, and those nine tax increases are going to cost us $24 billion over a 10-year period of time. The Democrats in charge of this year's legislative session didn't raise taxes nine times. They raised them 11 times. And they didn't raise taxes $24 billion. They did it $27 billion. So these guys in one legislative session raised more taxes than all the previous six legislative sessions combined. I mean, you just have to put these things in perspective. You hear all these numbers and you just go, well, what's that number compared to what other number? $27 billion, 11 different tax increases, property taxes, taxes on the customers of service business owners. Anybody who goes to a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant, a painter, you're going to be paying more for that. Like I said, property taxes, anybody who vapes. I'm not a big vaping person, but, I mean, they got slammed with a huge tax increase. Anybody who banks in the state of Washington, well, that's like everybody. Customers are going to end up paying more. I was blown away by the fact that they ended up increasing taxes on travel agents. I thought that industry had basically died, but they ended up they just decided to tax them as well. I mean, it was 11 different taxes, and our initiative just gets rid of all of them. It's called term limits on new taxes. We all like the idea of term limits on our elected officials. This is putting a term limit on the tax increases they pass. What I've always hated about Olympia is they raise taxes and it lasts forever. And what this initiative does is if they do it unilaterally in Olympia, we're going to put it on a really short leash and it's only going to last a short period of time. But if they want to put it on the ballot and let the voters vote, they can have the tax increase last for as long as they want.
You know, the travel agents thing, it was a little bit like Monty Python, you know, we're not dead yet, you know, and then, well, not yet, but they're going for it, right?
It's just a little wafer. It's just a little wafer.
What are we spending it all on? I mean, I still can't, you know, we don't have a line item budget. A lot of people don't know that. We have a section budget. We don't have a line item budget. People don't even know what we're spending this on, and how we've increased the budget. Billions and billions of dollars over the last 10 years is just incredible, and we're not really seeing a lot for it. What do you think the cause of all this is?
Well, I think there's just this insatiable appetite for bigger government and bigger taxes and more limitations on our freedom and our liberty, and you just can't turn it off. I mean, it's not like you can ever satiate them. There is just an insatiable appetite. No matter how much they take, they always want more. And a lot of people focus on the spending, and you're probably much more informed on what they spend the money on and would probably infuriate you more when you find out how much money they waste. But for me, it's like simply an idea of, is it even remotely sustainable to have government grow at these leaps and bounds? Because eventually the economy is going to turn, and at that point, you're going to have to just massively slash government spending. If they simply, and so you're going to have this roller coaster where it goes way, way, way up and then way, way, way down. And what I think everybody thinks is reasonable is, you know, it's okay for government to grow, but it should only grow at a rate that is reasonable, that the voters have a greater say in. And you'll do a better job than I will. Tell me about that last 2 days of the legislative session and how crazy things were and how much stuff they tried to do in the last 2 days.
You know, my wallet actually started to get a little hot. You know what I mean? I quite candidly, in 10 years, I have never seen such. Well, first of all, they didn't really take any of our suggestions into account in large part. And number two, to just throwing around hundreds of millions of dollars as, quote, budget dust, end quote, and then just saying, oh, yeah, the people will get along. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about them. Right? Well, we do worry about them. We should all worry about everybody and our neighbors and how they are getting along. And I think that's what was the most shocking to me, was it just they didn't care.
And what was it? It was like they had bills that were raising taxes where they hadn't even had a public hearing on these bills, where legislators, many of them, just hadn't even read the bills yet, and they're just throwing them on the floor and saying, hey, it's a title-only bill, we'll fill it in later. And it was just they weren't even following the Constitution, we're following the laws. And to me, the absolute epiphany, that point where you know it's completely out of control, is Inslee signs many of these tax increases, and all the many of the store owners showed up at the bill signing, and they're showing their extreme displeasure. I mean, they're putting their thumbs down for the official bill signing, you know, picture, and really just completely livid over the fact that they're raising all these taxes. And this one 20-year-old young lady goes to Inslee and said, "I'm going to lose my job because of this." And our governor showed tremendous compassion by simply telling this 20-year-old girl, well, if you don't like it, you can file a lawsuit. It is just jaw-dropping to me that instead of showing some kind of compassion that maybe this young lady losing a job would be really hard on her, instead he advises a 20-year-old girl, a woman, to go out there, hire an attorney, and sue the government. I mean, it is that out of control.
It really is. So let's go back 20 years, okay? And I want to go through this because it really, I think, shows what has happened and what you've done to try to stem this tide. But most of the initiatives over the years have been against taxes. So you had I-695 in 1999 to cut the car tabs, right? Mm-hmm. And 20 years later, we're still talking about that. And you have
I-722. And that's on the ballot in November, so we're going to get a chance to vote to get it back down to $30 because they're starting to creep back up again.
Right. Yeah. Then we have I-722, passed by the voters to cut state and local property taxes, of course declared unconstitutional, right, because we don't want to cut taxes. Then, right, then we have I-747, cut state and local property taxes again in 2001, passed by the voters but declared unconstitutional.
Well, and that one's an interesting story real quick, is that the initiative passed. They just said there's just no legal argument against this. You crossed out one number and you put the one on, you know, in place, and so we're going to put a 1% limit on the growth of property taxes. If you want more, then we're going to allow it to go more. That was in effect for about 6 years, and then some guy said, you know what, I think I can find a King County judge that can find that unconstitutional, and he ends up getting a King County judge to say that the voters were confused, that they were misled, is the legal, is the quote-unquote misled into voting for the initiative. But 30 days later, the legislature and Governor Gregoire signed it into law, and it's still the law today. So that one took a little circuitous place in our history, where it became law, stayed law for a long time, then they got rid of it, 30 days later became law, and it's still the law today. But it's actually one of our best victories was that one, but it was just goofy. They literally, it was a 5-4 ruling, and the four justices that were in the minority going, what do you mean misled? No one's even heard of that. What does that even mean? Voters were misled. They all knew the destination, a 1% cap on property taxes, but the other five justices said voters were misled. Just bizarre.
And they've used that later. And I think that, you know, this highlights this fight over the years. 2002, I-776, so 3 years after the $30 car tabs, right, you got to be fighting again to cut local motor vehicle excise taxes. That was passed by the voters, but that one was declared unconstitutional as well.
Actually, that one, it's so complicated, is that it was upheld by the Supreme Court, and then it went back to the Supreme Court later for the Sound Transit issue, because Sound Transit had sold some bonds, and so they ended up having to deal with the bonding issue. But the $30 tabs has been, or I should say, vehicle tabs in the state of Washington have stayed down for about 14 years as a result of those two earlier initiatives. But it's only in recent years they started shooting back up again. And so that's why we've done this follow-up initiative to bring it back down again. I always have to remind people that, yes, sometimes the court strikes down our initiatives, but you just have to look at the overall impact. And we have lower car tabs than we used to. We have more caps on property taxes than we used to. And, you know, the reality is over the last 22 years, if we had all been eating potato chips rather than doing initiatives, I hazard a guess our state would be quite a bit different.
Well, and I would completely agree with you, and I don't think this is a record of defeat. I think it's a record of how much we've had to fight this over the years. I-960, 2007, two-thirds majority vote, passed by the voters. In fact, it's been passed by the voters several times, but what happened? What happened with that one?
That one's really interesting. It's and just big picture. We always say two thirds, and a lot of people don't know what we mean. Is that we've consistently tried to make initiatives that just say to the voters, "Don't you want it to be a little tougher for Olympia to take more of your money? Let's just make it a little tougher." And so in 2007, we said, okay, there's this law on the books that has been on the books for quite a while that says they want to take our taxes, it should take a two-thirds vote of the legislature to do it. And that initiative passed, and in 2008 and 2009, they didn't raise a single tax. And the Democrats had overwhelming control of the House and the Senate. They had Governor Gregoire in there, but the law was preventing them from doing it. Then in 2010, it had been 3 years, so the first law that Governor Gregoire signed into law was the repeal of the two-thirds requirement, and so we did an initiative in 2010 that said, well, let's bring it back again. And then we did it in 2012, saying, we're going to do it again before you have a chance to get rid of it. You know, we pass it in 2010, we'll pass it in 2012, we'll do it every 2 years if we have to. And it was only after the voters had voted for it five times in a row, the last time in 2012, giving it more votes than any initiative in state history, the following 4 or 5 months, the court suddenly changed its mind after 20 years of staying neutral on it and said, you know what, we've now decided that it's unconstitutional to have a two-thirds requirement of the legislature to raise taxes. So it just shows you that this court is just completely nuts.
So what, okay, for the listeners that may have joined us a little late, what do you have on the coming up on the ballot? Everything goes according to plan. What is going to be on the ballot for the voters coming up in this November?
Well, I really appreciate that. And the biggie, I mean, I'm just so grateful to you and Liberty State and all the various groups that are helping with this, because it's really mind-blowing how the east side of the state is really fighting back with this ballot measure we're doing. It's called Initiative 1648. There's this amazing Facebook page that's been put together called where you just type in Washington 4, F-O-R-E, Washington 4, I-1648. And these guys that put this thing together, Kerry Condotta, you had a role, very strong role, Mike McKee out of Wenatchee, and they said, well, we're hoping to get 300 people to commit to helping us collect signatures by the July 5th deadline, and we're hoping to do that before the deadline. And you guys got 3,000 people to sign up in 3 days. They're up to 5,900 people now. I mean, it is just spreading like wildfire, because what the initiative does is it says these 11 tax increases they passed in Olympia this last legislative session, we're going to kill off all of them with this initiative and put strict time limits on the tax increases they impose on us. So it's givethemnothing.com, givethemnothing.com, or, again, you can go to that Facebook page, Washington 4, I-1648, and you're going to see business owners all across the state that are signing up on this big map, identifying businesses where you can sign a petition. I mean, it's just, it is grassroots at its finest. I've never seen anything like it in 22 years of doing initiatives.
And on top of that, you also have the latest iteration of car tabs as well. Tell the listeners about that one.
Yeah, it's really, really exciting. I mean, it's just, it's such a neat thing that the voters voted for it once in 1999. They got them down. They voted for it again in 2002, kept them back down. For about 14 years, we've kept car or vehicle tabs and the registration fees in the state of Washington for vehicles down really low. It's only in recent years it started going back up again, because the Democrats, as usual, it's always the Democrats, have these ideas of, well, it's not license fees, it's weight fees. It's not license fees, it's something else. They want to call it something else. And our initiative says we're going to get rid of all the taxes and fees that they've imposed on vehicles over the years. And essentially, it's like, you know, scraping the barnacles off a ship. You know, that's what's happened. We created $30 tabs. Barnacles have grown on it. The new initiative just scrapes those barnacles off, and we just get back down to $30 for any vehicle that's below 10,000 pounds. You know, a motorhome, motorcycle, light truck. You know, we just think everyone paying a flat rate $30 is more than fair for a little piece of plastic on a license plate.
More than fair, right? My goodness. More than fair. All right. We've got a few minutes left. I want to talk about the attempt to repeal I-200. Our mutual friend Ward Connerly, really one of the preeminent men, I believe, of the last century as far as civil rights are concerned. He was instrumental in getting I-200 passed in Washington State, and now I-1000 is attempting to undo that. If you could, and apparently there's a big movement to get that on the ballot in November as well.
It's really exciting. And what was so neat is that you guys allowed me into the House caucus room, and you got a chance to introduce Ward to everybody, and you just did a magnificent job of really highlighting what a hero this man is. He's a businessman, happens to be black, based originally out of California, helped pass this same measure down in California that said government should treat you equally. You shouldn't get, you know, pluses or minuses based on, you know, what box you check on an application form. And he heroically helped pass Initiative 200, which said the government is going to treat everyone equally, back 20 years ago. The crazies on the left have hated this thing for 20 years. We've had this law in effect that said government has to treat everyone equally, and they ended up qualifying an initiative to roll that back. And so the legislature, and we have to be very specific, not a single Republican went along with this. Every single Democrat said, let's instead allow the government once again to be able to have systematic racism, where the government gets to give you pluses or minuses based on what group you belong to. And they passed that. And so now there's an effort to let the voters have a chance to overturn what the legislature just overturned, which was the will of the people that says we want everyone to be treated equally. So it just illustrates that, you know, the price of liberty is eternal vigilance, that it's a tug of war we're in, and that the other side is never going to stop pulling the rope in their direction. And that's why it's so important for people like you and me and everybody else that's out there that cares about liberty and freedom, is to not give up just because the other side ends up taking some away from us. I think you just got to fight back even harder. And I can't think of a better way to be able to really send that message is then with this initiative we're doing right now. If you take away every single tax increase they pass this legislative session, the thing that I love about that is that you're sending a repudiation message to all of Olympia that says, this is what we think about Democrat-dominated control of Olympia. It's a repudiation of all of them, of Inslee, of Inslee-ism, of Inslee economics. I mean, it really is just an extraordinary opportunity to really be able to have the voters just, you know, convulse in a constructive, peaceful way about a government that is completely out of control and taking the money back. There's just no way you're going to get government's attention more than when you say, you just took $27 billion away from us. We're not going to let you get away with that. It's really exciting.
It is exciting. I want to throw one more thing on I-1000. And yeah. So what that is, it's going to end up apparently being a referendum to get on the ballot in November, but so the people can actually vote on this. I-1000, with all of the other things you mentioned, it also takes away veterans' preferences. And if people were trying to say, well, that's not true, but the nonpartisan House staff completely agreed with my take on this legally.
Yes, I saw that.
Can you believe that? And Governor Locke saying effectively that being a veteran really isn't a qualification. It was just a slap in the face. I couldn't believe it.
They were so disrespectful of any dissenting voices. I mean, it was really mind-blowing, and the Asian community just showed up in force, and they were very vocal and very amplified about how this is just so horrible that you're moving away from merit, and instead depends on what box you check on an application as to whether or not the government's going to put their finger on the scale either for you or against you. And it's just so offensive to everything that we believe in. I mean, the thing that is so neat about conservatives and people who believe in libertarian principles and liberty and freedom is that the idea of the government having that much power where they can decide who gets a job, who gets a contract, who gets admitted into our universities based on the box you mark on an application form, I mean, that doesn't identify who we are as individuals. It identifies us by groups. And that is what is just so horribly offensive. And the Democrats just saluted and just said, fine by us. Yeah, that's exactly what we want. And so it just goes to show that it's an ongoing fight, an ongoing battle, and you just can't move away to Idaho and move away to, you know, Arizona and think that all these problems are going to go away. I mean, you got to fight the fight where the fight is happening, and that's in Washington State.
And that's exactly right. Okay, if you could, one more time, where people can go to get more information.
I am so grateful, man. And Matt, thank you so much for having me on. You're just a hero down in Olympia, and it's just one of the few voices down there that hasn't gotten Stockholm Syndrome, identifying with your captors, that you're still willing to fight the good fight, even when you don't have the numbers in party, but you've got that, you know, you've got the right ideas and the right principles on your side. So it's called givethemnothing.com. It's givethemnothing.com. My email address is kind of easy, 30tabs@gmail.com. That's 30tabs@gmail.com. And finally, a Facebook page that is just exploding is Washington 4, F-O-R-E, Washington 4, I-1648. And we hope join and help us get that on the ballot.
Tim Iman, thank you. Permanent offense, I love that. I'm going to mention anyways. Permanent offense, because we should be on permanent offense. Truth is behind us, right? So, hey, thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio today. God bless you, and keep up the fight.
You too, man. You're awesome.
All right. So, Tim Iman, once again, givethemnothing.com. What a great website. And give them not one red cent more. Not one more cent. All right. Hey, I want to end the show. So, my opponent in the last election outright lied in a recent article. And so this is what we're seeing again. And I want to go back to what I was talking about at the beginning of the show with religious liberty. They are going to try to say that were advocating, quote, for religious rule. But anybody who's read the scripture understands that God intentionally kept Moses separate from Aaron, kings separate from the priests. So it doesn't work unless you're completely unread and ignorant or intentionally ignorant. And so this person is trying to say it again, outright lie. But this is what's really important, okay? With all of the bureaucrats and all of these so-called elected officials who really don't uphold their oaths around America today, trying to bring up this issue, the Supreme Court weighed in on this because what they're trying to do is put Christianity into a closet. And it's interesting, the folks that came out of a closet are now trying to put Christianity into a closet. And they're saying you can worship just beyond the four walls of church. You can do whatever you want to, you know, within reason, obviously, but beyond the, be behind the four walls of the church. Because they don't want Christianity influencing anything. Because when Christianity is living and breathing and acting beyond the four walls of the church, it will inevitably influence. So we're starting to see actual persecution here in America where people's jobs are being put on the line, people being smeared, lied about publicly by clearly folks that just are totally ignorant of history, totally ignorant of the Bible, totally ignorant of what they think they know. They just, it's not so, as Reagan used to say. But the Supreme Court weighed in on this in 1943. And this case, this actual quote I'm going to give here in a second, was quoted in the Janus decision, which was freedom of association. This was breaking what was effectively forced association. And then also in the Masterpiece Cake Shop decision, which was about religious liberty. So both those cases recently, the Supreme Court quoted this exact quote from 1943 in the case of West Virginia Board of Education versus Barnett. Okay, West Virginia Board of Education versus Barnett. 1943. You ready? No official, high or petty, can prescribe what shall be orthodox in politics, nationalism, religion, or matters of opinion. End quote. We have truth on our side. Keep up the fight. May God bless all of you. Thank you for listening to Patriot Radio today, and may you make this generation the greatest one.